Welcome all of you here to the March 20th, 2001 House Committee on Agriculture and Forestry. I want to thank all of you for coming. It's great to see so many citizens that are engaged on an issue and want to come here and let their views be known. And we will do our very best to make sure that each and every one of you that want to share your thoughts with us have an opportunity to do that. We have two bills to consider today. The first is House Bill 2061. And Ray will briefly give us a synopsis of this legislation, and then the chair will call forward the first witnesses.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2061 modifies the requirement that the director of the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center obtain approval of the Oregon State Fair Commission prior to substantially changing traditional fair activities. It removes the requirement that the state fair include the racing of animals. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ray. This time the chair would like to call forward Senator Peter Courtney, who is over here. Senator, if you would come forward, please. And also any individuals that you would like to accompany you, perhaps Katie and anyone else that you feel appropriate. Welcome, Senator.
Thank you. I'm looking for my tandem partner here. So I guess the tandem partner in terms of the relay race is 45 minutes out. So we'll do the best we can with this handoff.
Well, Senator, you are known as a very capable and experienced legislator. I expect absolute but nothing but a stellar performance from you here today.
That's like a racehorse for me.
Second.
Absolutely. For the record, Senator.
I'm Peter Courtney. I'm a state senator in District 17, which is the Salem-Kaiser area, and I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2061. Some of you may know this, but I need to put this on the record, that at the end of last session, we entered a budget note in the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center budget that required us during the interim to set up a special interim committee to study the functions and the funding and the capital construction and the maintenance needs, as well as the operation.
Senator, I hate to ask you to do this, but could you pull the microphone closer, sir? People in the back of the room are having difficulty hearing you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Please proceed, Senator. Thank you.
Thank you, Supreme Chair. And then to put together our recommendation on what we call a strategic plan and a modernization plan for what we know is the State Fair and the Exposition Center. And on the interim group, we're Senator Peter Courtney, Senator Gene Durfer, Senator Vern Duncan, a Marion County Commissioner Mike Ryan, a Salem Area Chamber of Commerce Representative, Executive Director Mike McLaren, Representative Jackie Winters, Representative Vic Backlund, Representative Gary Hansen, and the two members of Salem City Council, and Gavin Sample and Don Scott. I was asked to co-chair that interim committee along with Representative Jackie Winters, and that is my partner in tandem that I am desperately waiting for as I speak to you, but I'm not going to delay. We came up with a phenomenal number of recommendations as a result of our intensive work over a period of some 6 to 8 months, and we were aided with the incredible staff support of Janet Atkins and Robin Lamont, who along with those of us in the interim task force, worked long and hard to come up with proposals on the state fair. Now, this bill specifically is here to deal with, among other things, horse racing. And I remember that very well who made the motion that we modify the laws of the state of Oregon to remove from what has been in existence for many, many years a requirement a requirement that the state fair promote and encourage the prosperity and growth of racing of animals. Now, I don't have the legislative history on that language, Mr. Chair and members of the House, but I believe that would mean basically horse racing. And this bill, in effect, would eliminate the mandate that the state fair have horse racing. Now, that was a blockbuster motion that I made, and it was supported by this committee. If it wasn't a unanimous vote, there was only one dissenting vote. There is, as I recall, the executive director of the Chamber of Commerce, I don't recall whether he chose not to vote or vote no or yes, but otherwise every member that I just named for you voted to support that motion. It was not an easy motion for me to make because of the relationship of horse racing to the state fair over the years, as well as to the one-time potential for revenue for horse racing. We came to that bipartisan, nonpartisan decision as a result of some agonizing analysis. First of all, you should also know that not only did our task force recommend this, the State Fair Commission recommended this, a joint legislative audit committee in 1988 recommended this, and all recommended it because horse racing at the fairgrounds no longer generates sufficient revenue for the fair to continue to support the program. And the decline in revenue is due to a number of factors, the most significant being the inability of the fair to simulate revenue. Now, since that time that I've made this recommendation, something has happened in the last 2 months that you need to know about. If you were to go out to the fairgrounds and look at the grandstand area, we're not able to use the grandstands anymore. They're in such disrepair that they've had to be cordoned off, roped off, taped off. They're no longer safe, the entire grandstand area. And in order for us to repair, even do minimum cost, I'm looking at $30,000 to $40,000. But to develop the full use of the grandstand, including bleachers, below the bleachers and the west entrance, the rough estimates of rehabilitation cost would be $1.3 to $1.8 million. But this does not include the cost of structural upgrades required to meet current building code for seismic, wind, and snow loads. We came to the conclusion that in view of the state of the art of horse racing, not only in the state of Oregon but across the nation, I am not going to say to you, Mr. Chair and members of this committee, that I'm certified smart on horse racing. I am not opposed to horse racing. But the industry nationwide is in decline. The exception may be Churchill Downs. It's also struggling in the state of Oregon. We've had to put subsidy into it at the state fairgrounds, and we just concluded there are higher and better uses for that area out there than presently existed for horse racing. Therefore, we introduced this bill to remove the mandate that horse racing had to take place. By removing the mandate, Mr. Chair, it still would be permissible. It just doesn't require the state fair and the executive director to have horse racing every year as they does now. And Representative Smith has just lost it and grabbed the arm of Representative Hobson, and I don't know what's going on over there, but they are now Representative Nelson has grabbed Representative Hobson, and it's just all over the place. But the fact is that after they get through grabbing each other, they continue to grab each other. The fact is that we're simply asking for a tiny mandate. You know, mandates, I feel strongly about government mandates, Mr. Chair. And we want to make it permissive as opposed to mandatory for horse racing. So that's why I'm here. That's been in my involvement in it. We've spent a lot of thought in this. We really did. It was not easy. We didn't just rush into this. We're working very hard to turn the state fair around. Katie Cannon is the executive director, doing a remarkable job out there, just remarkable. And I believe that we have the support of the State Fair Commission. We have audits. We have other studies done, all of which say it's time to move on. Times have changed. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator. We appreciate your comments. I know that was not an easy decision for you to arrive at personally. Members, do we have questions of Senator Courtney? Well, it appears not, Senator. You've done a marvelous job. No one wants to question you. Senator, are you able to hang around a bit, perhaps?
I'd like to stay here just a bit because I just want to stay here. I mean, if you don't mind, I just like to stay here. I don't want to stay. I don't know how long I want to stay, but right now I feel like I want to stay here.
Senator, you're welcome to come sit on the dais if
you'd
like.
I want to stay here. I want to stay Katie.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I can understand that. Katie, welcome, and for the record, would you state your name?
For the record, my name is Katie Cannon. I'm the director of the Oregon State Fair. When I met with the chair, he suggested that I provide some history and, you know, of things, either studies or data, that would help you in this policy decision. What I have, I think you should all have a packet distributed to you. I'll kind of go over what's in that packet so you know what's there. The first sheet, which is a single white sheet, basically is just kind of a summary, if nothing else, to keep me on track. But it really divides it up, the long-term policy issues and then some of the immediate issues that I need to make and the commission needs to make as far as horse racing is out there. The second packet is a pink packet. It's the financial history of racing at the fairgrounds. The third packet is the it's green, and it's the recommendations made since 1992. We've had numerous studies. Just for your information, I was at the fair from 1989 to 1995. I have been gone until May of last year when I was asked to come back to the fair. There were several studies that have been conducted and task force in that time, and that's what's in the green packet. There's a four-year summary, which is a yellow sheet that deals with, just kind of to give you a perspective, the total handle and state revenue from Portland Meadows and the Salem meet, which I got from the Oregon Racing Commission data. And then there is a white packet of multiple pages that has the grandstand. It's a summary from the engineering report. There is also being circulated a blue kind of paper notebook that has photos of the grandstand and the summary in the first of that. So if there are no questions at this point, I'll start going through those.
Please.
The first particular page, which is the page that looks like this, really, for me, divides it up into the policy issues and my individual issues that I need to deal with at this point. The long-term issues tend to deal with, you know, the statutory requirement to run racing. A second area is, you know, since the fair and our financial situation will not allow us to operate racing. In all honesty, when we operate it, we lose money. We do not have the financial backing to be able to operate racing, so that's another long-term policy issue. And also, because of the condition of the grandstand, there is another policy issue that deals with you have to have a facility to run racing. And that is another long-term policy issue that needs to be decided. On the current issues that I deal with and my commission deals with is whether we run racing this year. And that particular issue deals with if I can locate an individual, an organization that has the financial backing and the desire to operate racing. I have been in conversation with HBPA, which is the Horsemen's Association, and we have tried to work something out, but it appears that there may not be the financial backing for this year. But I am putting an ad out to see if I can operate racing, if there's somebody else out in the market that would be willing to do that. Also, the other issue is the grandstand. I ended up getting a rough estimate on that particular facility. If we were going to do everything and get it up to code, it's over $5 million. But I could possibly do the bleacher area, which would leave seating for about $30,000 to $40,000. And I also have, if I wanted to actually put them inside the grandstand, that's about $1.3 to $1.8 million. So those are some things that we are dealing with as an organization to try to figure out if we can accommodate racing this year.
Certainly. Representative Smith.
This may be the time to ask, had you considered what the cost of tearing down this facility would be?
Chair Kropp and Representative Smith, I have not done an estimate at this point as to what it would cost to demolish it. And so that would be something that I would like to make a decision. If that is the direction that we end up going, then I would need to do that, and I'd like to do it by the end of the year.
Yeah, I'm not advocating that at all, but it sounds to me like, you know, in order to have a safe facility of $5 million, and we could invest $1.3 million and still not have the facility we need in the fact that gate receipts obviously won't cover this. Our budget is very tight. It makes me wonder about the continued future of this facility, because I don't think it's in the best interest of any of us to have a facility that's falling down.
Chair Cropp, Representative Smith, I don't disagree with you on that fact. I cannot put the public in there right now. I also have another issue, too, along that line, as far as what money I put into this facility, is I have a recommendation by this task force to discontinue horse racing as of October 1, 2002. So it limits me what I can do with that particular facility.
Beyond horse racing.
Pardon?
Beyond horse racing.
Yes, I have to do some things to just be able to function during fair time. But I have to put all those things in the mix and determine what is the best based on that recommendation that the legislature will eventually make either acceptance of the recommendation or not.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Katie, to make sure that I am understanding you correctly, that for you to put anyone in the grandstands this year, what's that going to cost you?
If you're talking about the seating area, it would be $30,000 to $40,000. What that does is it shores up the bleacher area, does some handrail replacement. I also would have to, and I may have to do this anyway, but the front of the facility, basically the water's coming down, it's separating the facade from the structure. And so I have a requirement right now to have a 25-foot buffer. I can't do that during fair. It takes out a good portion of my concession stand. There's an alternative in the study that basically says I can remove some of the pieces from the front and then actually be able to move it back to 5 feet from the building, which is acceptable. Then I have my fire lane and I have my concession stand. There's a portion of that, when I look at the whole picture, that I may need to spend some money on, because otherwise I'm going to lose more money than what I'm going to spend.
So, Katie, the article that we saw in the newspaper the other day, in essence, said a portion of the grandstands, if I recall correctly, has been declared unsafe. Is that correct?
Chair Cropp, if we were going to move people in the interior of the building, I can't do that right now, and that's the $1.3 to $1.8 million price tag. Right now, my staff, we have hard hats. This is declared a hard hat area. We store things in there, but I will not allow my staff in there without hard hats on. So, but to get to the interior part of the building, coming from the west entrance, and then fixing what needs to be fixed on the inside, it's 1.3 to 1.8. That doesn't get it up to code. Those are only structural issues. It doesn't handle the seismic or mechanical, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, any of that.
Okay. Please proceed. Thank you.
The pink sheet provides you a history of the live handle and the total handle. If you turn to the back side, I've plotted it out, so it's pretty visual. You'll notice that certain years on the total handle, that's when the contractor was able to do simulcast. That's what it makes the bars go really high, is the simulcast. The other, the smaller, the kind of gray bar tends to deal with the live handle. We starting, I think, in 1997, basically a state fair could not operate the simulcast. It has to go to a commercial operator. We cannot do it at all, so it has to be a commercial operator. Since then, it's not even being operated. The simulcast is not being operated there.
And Katie, just briefly give us the history of why the simulcast situation is the way it is?
Well, the Oregon Racing Commission has control. I think Steve Barra may be a better person to ask for that history. Like I said, that was kind of in the time frame that I was gone. But the simulcast, basically, they assign that simulcast to a license. And there was a statutory change that prohibited the state fair from being able to get that simulcast license.
Okay.
It needed to go to a commercial vendor. The green sheet, this is a summary. In fact, it was a good exercise for me because many of these studies were done while I was gone. It gives you a summary of the recommendations within those studies that dealt, you know, the portions that dealt with racing. Back in 1992 was probably our first sign that the industry was having some struggles with the onset of the lottery and then later on the casinos. We have, I think, the 1992 and 1996 study, were that one along with the 98 study, but the 96 study was done by Marken Consulting, and really that was an assessment of the paramutual operation. And with the elimination of simulcast, as far as for our particular operation there, it was very detrimental. If you move on, there was a task force that was appointed by Senator Gene Durfler, and they did recommend that horse racing be an integral part of the state fair and a major resource. There is some conflict in that it did talk about the reduction in the race handle in that study, but they may be referring. I couldn't find a really detailed background of that particular task force, but it may have dealt with the fact that the revenue that they're talking about is simulcast. And then it also made reference that the building, you know, that's something we would have to look at as far as whether you put, they said $1 million into that building, that won't even get it up to code or take care of the structural damage. But so that was one recommendation to keep racing. The Joint Legislative Audit Committee in 1998 did another study, and it also indicated that there was no longer sufficient revenue for the state fair to continue to support the program. You move on in the task force, which was in, the report was presented to the emergency board in June of 2000. There were a couple things. There was a recommendation, as Senator Courtney had stated, that to discontinue horse racing as of 2002, and then also the feasibility study that was put out by Johnson Consulting in conjunction with the master plan. They talked about that we should follow our mission with the exception of the mandate to support horse racing. I put a summary at the very last there, it's by C.L. Youngman, and that is the summary of the grandstand situation. Another piece that gives you a perspective is the yellow piece that deals with, it looks at Portland Meadows, their total revenue and the total handle. And the total revenues to the state, I compared with, so you could get some kind of perception of the difference of Portland Meadows and the Salem race meet and how much it contributes to the state and how much the total handle is. The last piece, of course, is the summary from Youngman, which is the engineering firm that did the evaluation on the grandstand. Any questions?
Members, do we have questions of Katie?
Yes, I do.
Representative Smith.
I'm not sure when I need to ask this, but in our information here, it said 1997. Horse racing at the fair lost $52,895. if it's losing money, why do we want to continue to the year 2002? And then put in another $30,000 to $40,000 to upgrade the system, just so we can do a minimum horse race. And maybe Senator Courtney could address that question also.
I need to. There's going to be a.
Yeah, that's the one.
Is this because we're? Is this? Can I have just a moment?
Please, hey, Senator, take all the time you need.
You can have.
Take all the time you need, Senator. Fine. Sure.
We had a contract with I think it was great. And I think it was great. And I think it
Well, let me, I don't want to take the finish time. It was my understanding, Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, that there were contractual obligations involved in terms of horse racing up to that date. I don't know. I'm unclear on that. I remember at the time when this thing was evolving that the former director and things, there had been certain commitments made, and I don't know whether that's the answer or not, and I don't have the details on it. And that's. And I was just trying to confirm with Katie, but it's one of those things where you need to go and discuss it. I don't know the answer, but I thought that date was tied to some kind of contractual things that have been done in the past that said we'd do this. But I'm not sure that, Representative Smith. I want to be frank with the members of the committee. That's why I'm struggling here. But in my mind, That's why we didn't just pull that thing out of the air. We felt like, well, you got to do it because you signed or made agreement or something is going on with racing commissions or something else.
Katie?
Chair Crouch, Representative Smith. Also, I don't know what's in those expenses. There may have been some other expenses as far as facilities are concerned. I don't really know what those expenses, I don't have a detailed list of that. I can address in 1998, we ran our own race meet without a contractor. And that's the one where we lost $100,000. That's why we don't run racing ourselves. We use a contractor. We've used Lone Oak Racing. We've HBPA, the Horsemen's Association, we contract with them to run the race meet.
What was your revenue in 1998? I didn't hear that correctly. Beg your pardon, Mr. Chair.
The net revenue is a negative $100,000. We lost $100,000 when we ran it ourselves. That's why we don't operate the race meet ourselves.
Okay, and follow up, Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Well, I'm a bit of a loss with the information that's presented to me. If we're running at a loss without even making repairs, I can't understand how we would be obligated contractually. I would think I would need more information on those two items before we could proceed with the full amount of knowledge that I would need in this situation, because some other testimony is going to be presented today that could change that. That's troublesome for me.
Chair Smith, I'm not here to either support or not support this particular bill, but what I wanted to do was present to you the facts of the history that I have found out in going through this. So as far as I'm just letting you know that if we operate racing, we don't have the financial means to do that, and we need to use a contractor even if we do it now.
Katie, question for you in regards to the sheet with the graphing on it. Why is there such a tremendous difference in 96-97 total revenue from the Salem race meet and 97-98? And we went from 148. Is that because you went ahead and went with a private contractor? That's not why. Okay.
No, it is because simulcast was included into the 96-97 race meet. And where in 97-98, remember, a law was passed that prohibited, it needed to go to a commercial operator. It was not operated at the state fair. Simulcast was not. And so that's the difference between, that's the dramatic drop.
Well, that answer then begs the question of, if obviously you were receiving that kind of revenue from simulcasting, if you were continuing to be able to receive revenue from simulcasting, then I would assume it would be an easier issue for you to look at retaining the status of the grandstands and so forth, because you would have a greater income. Is that correct?
Chair Crouch, let me explain one thing. This is what they call total handle. This is all the money that's bet. Trust me, we didn't get all this.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Handle means that everything that has come in. But then they have payouts, they have the purses, they have the payout for the bettors. I mean, they had a multitude of things that come out of this particular.
So this isn't your net by any means?
No.
All right. Representative Nelson, you had a question.
Thank you, Chairman Kraft. Thank you, Senator Cartney and Ms. Cannon, for being here today. Looking at this sheet, the total revenue to state Portland Meadows compared to total revenue to state Salem race meet, are those over the same periods of time? I mean, duration, 2 months each? I mean, Portland does 766 and Salem does 149, or I don't know how to read, probably.
Chair Crouch, Representative Nelson, no. The state fair, if you go to the pink sheet, it talks about the number of days that we run, race days. The state fair runs a lot fewer race days than what Portland Meadows would run.
So in order to compare apples to apples,
yeah.
I mean, if we took the same period of time for Portland Meadows versus Salem, would they be more comparable?
Chair Crouch, Representative Nelson. If you say, if I compared 9 days to Portland Meadows and 9 days at the State Fair, I'm guessing at this point, because there is a much bigger market in Portland, that Portland Meadows would pull in more people, there would be more money bet. And also you have to look at the fact that they operate with simulcast. So I don't know if I can get to apples and apples. I can look at the similar number of days, but I don't think even their live handle would be more than ours. And how much, I don't know, I think Steve Barham probably could answer that question better than I could.
I should hold it for him. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Certainly.
Mr. Chair, never miss an opportunity to ask a question, right?
That's right.
May I please ask one more? Chairman Krupp and Senator Courtney and Ms. Cannon, is it possible to construct a new facility for less than this repair cost?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, if the only thing I have to compare is we've looked at, for example, and we're doing apples and oranges here, okay, because it's if you look at a grandstand that's open-faced, it's limited to what you can do with it. But a facility, I know that, for example, the arena over at Deschutes County was about $8 million. That's a 5,000 to 7,500 seat arena. And so if you're asking me, can you build another grandstand, you could probably build a grandstand for the same money, I'm guessing here. But the fact is you still have the issue is I'm only limited to what I can do with it. When it's open face, I don't have a floor. I mean, all I have is a huge bleacher area. So I don't know that you could probably build it, but the question is from an operational standpoint, would you want to replace it with a building just like it?
A follow-up, please, Mr. Chair. Ms. Cannon, then, is it probable that you would have year-round revenue potential if you had a new facility?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, horse racing is that the days are controlled by the Oregon Racing Commission. I don't see that we would ever have the option to run horses year-round because no. It's divided up between the dog track and the horse track.
Follow-up, Mr.
Sure.
Chair, please. Ms. Cannon, but are there other uses that would, I mean, could we put, what's the Kaiser baseball team in there? Or the new baseball team or Portland Trailblazers or somebody? No, I'm just kidding. Good ideas, though. But are there potentials that would use this facility year-round that would produce revenue, I mean, a 20% profitable revenue? Have we pursued that? Have we had a committee like we've had the Youngman Committee or Youngman Group, evaluate the structure? Have we had a committee really study revenue potential year-round?
Chair Krupp.
Or help you with it.
Representative Nelson, the answer is yes. From the standpoint is the Interim Legislative Task Force looked at that, and when they developed the master plan, to be quite honest, the racetrack is not there. Okay, so we have had somebody look at that and then looked at the market analysis, which is just being completed, looked at every component of that particular master plan and determined which ones can make a profit and which ones of that pieces of that master plan cannot. But racing was not in that master plan. Now, if you ask me if we put a grandstand out there, can we use it year-round and do things that would be profitable, it's Oregon. And we have a limited, time frame when you can count on the weather as best we can to operate out there. So if you have an open grandstand and you have a facility out in front of it, you're going to be limited by the weather here. If you take that ground and put it into something like the arena over at Deschutes County, then yes, then I can operate year round. But with an open grandstand and an open field, I'm very limited in Oregon. If we were in Arizona, it would be a different issue.
Last question, please.
Certainly.
Mr. Chair. Senator Courtney and Ms. Cannon, coming from the aviation business from whence I come, the various kinds of facilities, from Varco Pruden buildings to the new Spruce Goose Museum, a little more expensive, but there are a number of safe meet building code type type structures that, you know, could cover this facility without, you know, tremendous cost, and I'm just wondering if we've evaluated it from that viewpoint. Various types of structures.
Chair Kropp, Representative Nelson, as far as in the master plan, we have not gotten to the design phase.
Oh.
We're still kind of evaluating what we do with that particular property, what makes sense, because the State Fair, one of my jobs in, as director is to improve the financial health of that organization.
Sure.
I'm not willing to invest in anything that's not going to make money.
Mm-hmm.
And so we will work through that process in making sure that the buildings that we build are going to somehow generate revenue.
Senator?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I need to make some statements here. We could not look at that area in a vacuum. There's so many other buildings and things out there that we also had to look at in terms of the repair and the disrepair. We're looking at the armory. You know, the army situation out there. Trying to figure out what to do with every square foot of that to generate revenues and to bring it back. Number two, please understand, Mr. Chair, the horse is not leaving the State Fair. I don't know what your involvement or your feelings are about a horse, but if you like to be around them and things, we are dramatically putting money into the horse show, what they call the horse show, if you understand that phenomenon. The horses will be at the State Fair, the horse show barns, the arena, we put money in, we're upgrading that. That is where we felt, when it comes to the horse, we should put our money. But to continue to try to keep horse racing alive, it's my understanding from the experts, you'd have to go out there. You can't just bring back what was. You'd have to build an incredible facility in terms of people's attitudes. The casino issue is now an issue in Oregon in terms of that. You know, people want to go and they want that kind of luxury. To continue to pour money into this facility is like pouring perfume on a pig. I love pigs, but the fact is it isn't going to work. It just is not going to work. And so we had to bite the bullet and make this decision. So the horse isn't going to leave. We had to look at all the buildings out there and all the areas with the master plan, strategic plan, and we're trying to figure out ways to generate revenues. And if we're going to rebuild things or put monies into things, either structures or activities, we had to figure out how do we get our best bang for our buck, recognizing it is going to require, I got to say this to you fellow legislators, and I'm on my way out, there's always going to have to be some subsidy on the part of the state government if that State Fair and Exposition Center is going to survive. That's just the way it is. That's the way it is across the nation. And we're trying to minimize that subsidy with horse racing. We cannot minimize it. It's going to cost us too much in the long run. It is. It is.
Mr. Chair.
Certainly.
Yes, Senator Courtney, I certainly respect exactly what you just said. Ms. Cannon, I want to compliment you on your focus on having a profitable activity and certainly making it a quality event for the state, and I understand the focus on profitability, how important it is. And thank you for both for your efforts.
Thank you, Representative. Question for you. Katie, in our previous conversations, you had indicated there might be difficulty in putting on a race this particular year, even if this bill did not pass and the requirement didn't go away, because of the work that needs to be done just to allow people up into the grandstand, not the interior of the building, but the $30,000 to $40,000 you need to spend to make that happen. You were indicating there might be difficulty in having a race, period, no matter at everyone's best efforts. Why is that?
Chair Krupp, there's obviously one is the building, and I would need to make improvements there. But also I need to find a contractor that has the financial means and the desire to operate racing this year. We've been talking to HBPA, but it appears that that's not going to work out because of financial backing. And so I put out an ad and letters to people, various people in the industry. I don't want to make the assumption that I know that there isn't anybody out there that's interested, and so I put that out this week to determine, you know, to request letter of interest. and to see if anybody will come forward and operate this race meet, understanding the limitations that we have this year, because we have the limitation. We can't, even if we started today, we would not be able to make any improvements in the interior of that building in time for the race meet. Government doesn't work that fast. And so what I have to do is find somebody that also has the means of maybe putting portable bedding windows, you know, the connections between there and the tote board. I mean, a whole multitude of things that we would need to do to make do for this year. And I have to see if there's anybody out there that's willing and interested in doing it.
Okay, so what you're describing is that even with your very best efforts, there may not be a contractor come forward. And if that were the case, then no matter what we did, you wouldn't be able to hold a race meet.
That is correct. Chair Krupp, because we can't afford to operate it.
Okay.
I cannot afford to take that kind of loss.
Okay.
Please understand, Mr. Chair, this removes the mandate. That's all of it. It removes the mandate. I hope you...
Right. It does not remove racing. That's still an option, you're saying, but this just removes the requirement for it in statute.
Now, I want to be honest with the members of the committee. There's no question. It's all documented what we felt should be done with those facilities in terms of higher and better uses. The bill basically says the mandate's got to go, otherwise we got to keep faith in the law that the mandate. The bill removes the mandate.
So having said that, Senator, what if we pass this legislation that says and Representative Winters has just walked in, and we'll ask Representative Winters to come forward at this time. But Senator, if we do remove the requirement, does that act in itself, in reality, lead to the elimination of racing because the state will not lose money at it, and therefore they won't run it?
Mr. Chair, all the recommendations are, yes, that we should phase out horses, absolutely. I mean, there's not going to fight against that. I'm not going to fight against that.
Okay.
The different reports, studies, as well as our interim task force recommended, we should phase out horse racing.
Okay. So I, in my mind, I want to be clear, we're removing the requirement, but because if we do remove the requirement, Katie could still make the decision to hold the horse race, but only if she had a contractor come forward and do it, because she's not going to do it and lose money, correct? That's what you're telling me. All right. I'm clear now. Representative Winters, thank you very much for coming. Please, for the record, state your name.
For the record, I'm Jackie Winters, State Representative for District 31. Sorry that I'm late, but I just finished coming back from the Task Force on Services to Senior and Disabled in East Multnomah County, so it's been a long trip back. And I'm Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm just here to say that I support the changes in the House Bill 2061. I'm sure that Senator Courtney, who was my co-chair with me in the interim, have probably gone through all the details as to why the interim task force on the state fair brought you this recommendation, so I won't go into all of that all over again, and I'm sure that Katie Cannon, who is the director of the state fair, have probably also stated the reasons why. So I'm just here to give you my support for the bill.
Well, thank you, Representative. I will tell you that Senator Courtney looked like a lost puppy until you walked into the room. So,
right.
Representative Nelson, you have a question.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Winters. For coming, could you tell us how has this, maybe Ms. Cannon or Senator Courtney, how have we subsidized the state fair dollar-wise over the past 1 to 5 years? I mean, what has been that requirement?
Chair Krupp, Representative Nelson, I probably need to work backwards on that, okay?
Okay.
Last session and with the e-board, there's probably been about a total of $1.3 million.
Last year?
The last biennium. Okay.
1999 and 2000.
This one that we're into right now, 99 to 2001, there's probably a total of $1.3 million. Prior to that, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly what that dollar amount is, but there was a subsidy I know that occurred in 1997. I want to say it was around $700,000, but I'm just speaking from memory. We are asking this biennium, for the upcoming biennium, in our budget, $1.5 million for operational expense. And our plan is that eventually we will taper off the operational subsidy for operations and programming, but as the task force and the audit committee indicated, we will never be able to take care of major maintenance, nor will we be able to take care of debt service in the future. That is not uncommon with fares throughout the country. They are subsidized in some manner. My goal is to get us to the point we are self-sufficient as far as our operational and our programming needs.
Thank you.
Okay, members, are there any additional questions? Hearing none, Katie, Senator, Representative, thank you all for coming. We appreciate your comments. At this time, the chair would like to ask if there's anyone in the audience who has signed up to testify that lives more than 100 miles away. There's a gentleman in the back? No, there isn't? Okay. All right. In that case, the chair will simply go down the list, and the first individual is Juanita C. Jones. Juanita, if you would come forward, please. And then on deck will be Colonel McFadden. You'll be next. And while Juanita is coming, if the chair would like to take this moment to recognize, as is his custom, a couple of former members of this body, Representative Jim Welsh and former Representative and State Senator Dick Springer. Thank you both for coming. Juanita, for the record, would you state your name, please?
Juanita Jones. I'm a trainer.
Would you talk into the microphone? Oh. Thank you.
Juanita Jones, and I am a trainer, owner also. I would like to ask, what is the state fair for? Is it for the entertainment of the people, or is it to make money?
Are you asking for a response from us?
Yes, I am. Sorry, Ms. Kennedy, up here.
I'm not sure it's a matter of policy. Anyone up here is probably qualified to answer that, Juanita, and I will say that that's because we, in all sincerity, were not around when the state fair was first begun and don't know the intent of what this, even though there's legislation that authorizes it and probably talks about this to some degree, we wouldn't be familiar with that. I think the point you're driving at is that the state fair is not necessarily meant to be a profit center. But rather is to be there for the people.
That is true. And that is why the state subsidizes it, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Excuse me, I have a cold. And my folks raced here over 60 years ago. And it was a community fair. They raced here, and they run their horses here. People came to the races. They came to the fair. They came to have fun. But they did not make money at it. Nobody did. People made quilts, they won ribbons. People canned cherries, they won ribbons. That was the basis of the state fair. And if you take away the horse racing, you're taking away part of the tradition. We ourselves, and I'm sure that the owners and trainers that are here today will tell you that we tightened our belts to put on the show for the last few years. So the state fair board, the state itself, isn't the only one who's lost money on this. But it costs a lot to put on the show. The state did get the cream of the crop when we had simulcasting. The fair board also did. Now they want to throw us to the dogs. And I think that's basically the way we all feel. If you take away the racing from Salem, it won't be too long before probably Portland will go too. And that means that owners, trainers, the grooms, the riders, they will all go somewhere else. And the state will lose a lot of revenue, also local businesses. You have hotels, you have motels, you have restaurants, you have all the feed that we buy around here. Plus, we employ local help. So the state itself will be losing people that will be going to other states.
So Juanita, if the state fair didn't have racing, and if for some reason Portland Meadows quit racing, there would be no other organized horse race in the state of Oregon?
Because there won't be any horses to run the Tillamook meet, there won't be any horses to run the Pineville meet, there won't be any horses to run the Grants Pass meet, plus it will affect Washington also. They have fairs up there that they conduct horse racing at, and they're non-profit, and they won't have the horses to put on the racing. And people do come to see the horse races.
Okay.
They don't only go to bet. That's, you know, gamblers. They go to bet. People go to enjoy an athlete.
Juanita, what do you feel the state of horse racing is in Oregon right now as an industry?
Right now, the way things are going, it's dying. For one thing, there has been the lottery that has put a damper on it. The casinos have put a damper on it. But also no advertising. That has put a damper on it. You know how many people have told me during the state fair? Well, I didn't know they had horse racing there. I was there. I would have went if I'd known there was racing. They didn't even know they were racing. Same way as Portland Meadows.
Okay. Members, we have questions of Juanita? Juanita, thank you. Appreciate you coming and sharing your viewpoint. Next on deck will be, and I want to say this correct, is that Carol Nikolai? Nikolai, you'll be up next. Colonel McFadden, welcome.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Colonel Julian McFadden from Corvallis. My fitness to be here and discuss this subject is basically from the following. My grandfather in 1933 as a Oregon State Senator wrote the Oregon Prairie Mutual Betting Law and definitely started the first racetrack at the State Fair and helped as they enlarged that eventually from a half-mile track to a 5/8 of a mile track. And it's in our family from 1910 on, thoroughbred horse racing, and it's real personal with me, this discussion we're having here this afternoon, because even though my grandfather raced all over Canada and the United States, his favorite track was always the State Fair, Salem, Oregon. It was a personal thing with our family. This discussion goes a whole lot farther than making money at the Oregon State Fair reference pari mutuel betting. That problem has been exacerbated terribly by, number one, the Oregon Lottery, which has put the Oregon State budget, as you folks know even way better than I do, on a gambling basis, which is not that hot because it's a different type of gambling than we're talking about when we talk about pari mutuel betting and horse racing. And worse now, Indian gaming came on, and the last blow was when the Oregon Racing Commission elected, they think, you know, correctly and honestly, to take the simulcasting dates away from the Oregon State Fair and inhibit the director's ability to at least run the racing at the State Fair on a break-even or better basis. Now, there are others who will testify here, HPPA and OTBA and whoever else, that will have the facts and figures a lot closer at hand than I do, but I can assure you there is a very large economic impact on the racing families, on thoroughbred breeding farms, quarter horse breeding farms, just the Oregon racing industry, which is considerable. It's big, a lot bigger than you might think. A lot of it's being raced out of state, of course, and horses being sold out of state. But the absence of the State Fair, which is a place to take our horses during the middle of summer and get them ready for Portland Meadows and on, that's going to really hurt. It hurts a lot of people who don't have the ability to send their horses to Northern California or to, you know, Nebraska or somewhere else. It's really a personal thing. It's going to hurt bad if we lose horse racing. Now, I'm not unmindful of what our director of the state fair is saying. This place has got to get on a break-even basis. You know, the first thing that ought to be done is trying to get that simulcast back. And that's a deal with the Oregon Racing Commission, and perhaps it could be done. I can say that honestly because those simulcast dates went to the Oregon Thoroughbred, the dog track of Portland. My brother owns it. So I know what impact that has. We want it back. Let me tell you right now, we want it back for the horses. Now, I love my brother, but I'm telling you flat out that we need it back here. Generally, he is way more of a horseman than people might think. He sees an opportunity in the dog track, and he took it. Now, I want to read something that I just happened to notice here a few minutes ago. In this bill, 2061, the objects and purposes of the Oregon State Fair are to disseminate knowledge concerning and to encourage the growth and prosperity of all agriculture, cultural, stock raising, horticultural, mining, mechanical, artistic, and industrial pursuits in this state, et cetera, et cetera. Now, right after that, we're trying to eliminate an inclusion of animal racing. But I don't see anything in there about a Coney Island like the state fair is starting to develop into. I see nothing there about all the rides and et cetera, et cetera, and the rap concerts and the rest of that, which I know are important, just like they are in the Benton County State Fair, which I'm a part of. I know it's important to have people of all ages there. But the real reason of this state fair is an agricultural fair for the people of this state. And I can remember this fair from the time about 1936 on, and I know it's always been an ag fair, and that's really going downhill. Trust me on that. That's going downhill fast. We should be ashamed of that in the state of Oregon. We should be trying to figure out a way to get all the agriculture and related pursuits brought back up again at the state fair. Check and see how many county exhibits are there as compared to how many were there in 1938 or 1946. Just check it out. It's really pathetic. Now, I don't have instant ways of improving all this. I'm not trying to pull a wool over your eyes, that'd be dumb. But at the same time, my last offering, I guess, about horse racing at the state fair is this. If you ever sat up there in a nice late August day, this great Western Oregon weather, and saw how many people are in those grandstands, not betting a penny, unfortunately, but just enjoying that thoroughbred horse racing. They just enjoy it to the point where it's just the whole reason almost for coming to the state fair. Sure, the kids are out there going on the rides and et cetera, et cetera. The people are really enjoying themselves. And I'm not sugarcoating that. I'm telling you that's a fact. And I would just hate to see us not try to figure out a way somehow to have animal racing, horse racing at the state fair. And I'm quite sure that clause in there to have animal racing is one that my grandfather, Senator Julian N. McFadden, put in there. And I'm proud of him. I'm proud of this track over all these years. I just hope somehow in the future we can figure out a way to save it. And thank you for allowing
thank
me
you,
to
Colonel. I very much appreciate your very
questions?
Personal attachment. Do we have questions of the Colonel? Well, hearing none, thank you. I appreciate your comments, sir. The chair would like to call. Thank you all. As a matter of decorum, we generally don't allow clapping. I do appreciate that, your support for his comments. Carol, would you come forward next? And next on deck, after Carol, is Jackie Keller McCormick. Jackie, are you here? You are? Wonderful. Okay, be ready to come forward when Carol is finished. For the record, ma'am, state your name. Thank you.
My name is Carol Nicolai, and I would like to say that I'm opposed to this bill. I'm a horse owner, breeder. We have stallions that we stand. We have mares that foal babies in this state. We race here. We have a farm, as you can tell. Anything like this would greatly impact our farming operation. You lose Salem, you would lose Portland, you would lose all the fair meets. Everything is interconnected. It's all an integral part. One has to rely upon the other. And it, quite frankly, we have been fooling our mayors in California the last 2 years because this is an unfriendly state towards racing. We would like to continue. I'm a five-generation Oregonian. I'd like to have everything here. I don't want to leave, but if racing dies off, my farm goes, we all go. So I would really oppose this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Carol. All right, Jackie, would you come forward? And on deck behind Jackie is Patrice Mayfield. Patrice, are you here? She is. Wonderful. Jackie, welcome. And for the record, would you state your name, please? Jackie, would you be sure to speak into the microphone, please? Anyone is fine. Thank you.
I'm an owner and a trainer, as well as I've ponied horses for many years at the Canby Fairgrounds when we had racing there, also at the Multnomah County Fairgrounds. So this is years ago. I have a couple of things that I'd like to bring up. First off, when you're talking horse shows, they get ribbons. They don't get money. They don't pay taxes on the income that they get from the ribbons. If we make money, we pay state income tax on that money. So therefore, the horse show would not generate a second income for the state. It would be the ribbon versus no income. It would be more of a hobby for these people. Second off, there are some tracks in our state that we do not have a grandstand. We have bleachers. We have trailers that have betting booths in them. They're like an office trailer that they would pull in. You would cash your ticket at one trailer, take your money and go to the other trailer and place your bet. There are three or four Washington tracks that still do this. The grandstand is, our racing is in the summer here. It's not in the winter when the weather is bad. We have a May meet that starts in May after Portland Meadows that runs in the Washington area, which swings down into Union, Oregon, which is our Eastern Oregon livestock show. They have the outside trailers there, and it works beautifully. There is no simulcasting at these small meets. Salem, I believe, and Grants Pass were the only ones that I can recall that had the simulcasting. I don't know why this couldn't be done at Salem. We have a huge concrete area outside of the grandstand where some portable bleachers could be set up. I know from my experience raising my children in this state that the grandstands, after we took the kiddies on the ride, it was a good place to go in, watch the horses ride with the kids out of the sun in the heat. Many of those days run up in the 80s and 90 degrees, and it was a nice place to go, even though we didn't have money to bet or didn't bet. Another thing I'd like to mention is that in the winter, like now, I'm stabled at the fairgrounds. We are kind of like a satellite training facility because Portland had some problems, and even when they didn't have problems, there were more horses than what we could stable. They do not stable quarter horses at Portland Meadows. They have nowhere to go unless you have a farm. Some of us have sent our quarter horses with different trainers that have big farms and will run their thoroughbreds for them on track. The quarter horse racing right now is really hurting because of this. We have nowhere to really train our horses. If the state fair closes our racing for us, I, too, would have to leave the state. Mm-hmm. And I have a license in four different states. I've raced in Idaho. I've raced in Montana. I've also gone to Canada, Anabasa Downs. There's another place that uses trailers. And I just hate to see it go. I've enjoyed the facility here. I've recently moved into this area from Sandy, Oregon. Because of the snow, there was 1 year I had to scratch four head of horses. I got plowed in. Couldn't get out to take my horses to the track to run them. So this was one of the reasons why we kind of moved close to the I-5 corridor where we could just go right up and down I-5, hit all these little tracks, stay home with our children, and be around. And this is the one thing I look forward to when we bought our land. Please keep it going. Thank you.
Thank you, Jackie. Appreciate your comments. Next, the chair would like to call Patrice, if you'd come forward. And on deck is David Benson. David, are you here? Good. Thank you. Welcome, Patrice, and for the record, state your name. Thank you.
My name is Patrice Bricker Mayfield. I am an Oregonian. I'm also a horse owner, trainer, breeder, and recently bought a farm to support this. Most of the horsemen here are many-generation horse people. I'm a first-time. It's been a ball. We have retired businessmen. We have an ex-train engineer. We have police officers. We have military loggers. We come from every walk of life. We come from every state in the union. We have chosen this business. No, we don't make a lot of money, but we don't get into it expecting to make a lot of money. We do pay a lot of taxes. Eliminating the state fair horse racing will, in effect, eliminate all fair racing in the state of Oregon. By doing that, you've basically eliminated the high school team that will eventually be drafted into the NFL team. We have people at Portland that run at the larger tracks in California, in Minnesota, in Canada, in the state of Washington. You cannot run half of the year and expect your horses to be competitive the other half. We need a place to train. We need a place to run our horses. I'm not in a position to leave the state to do what I've chosen to do. I must stay here. And to do that, I need Salem. Horse racing is more than just pari-mutuel betting. As they've said, it's a show. It can be a heartbreaker, but it can be a ball. Not just to us, but to the people that come to see us. I've stood in the stands. I've stood in the crowds during the fair. People just amazed at what these animals can do. It's like watching a good football player. It's like watching the Olympics. These horses are wonderful. They're bred to do this. You eliminate it. You virtually eliminate the reason for existence. I'm not opposed to the lottery, but I do believe it's being promoted way out of its boundaries in an effort to eliminate another end of gambling, which is opposed by many people. I'm not a gambler myself. I gamble when I put a horse on the track. I really am opposed to the lottery being advertised to the extent of multi-million dollars, whereas we have no money for advertising and virtually eliminating an entire industry. Not just the horse people that are here today, but the support people. We know about trickle-down economics, and we know what this will do to many, many people, not only in this state, but in Washington, Idaho, California. And I think Colonel McFadden pretty well covered what the rest of what I wanted to say was. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Patrice. I want to let you know that I also am not a gambler, but yet as a farmer, I am the biggest gambler there is. We appreciate it. David, come forward, and on deck is Ursula Givens. Ursula, are you here? You are, aren't you? Okay, all right. Welcome, David. For the record, state your name, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is David R. Benson. I reside on a small farm myself in Aurora, Oregon. I am president of the Oregon Horsemen Benevolent and Protective Association, more commonly known as the Oregon HBPA, much easier to say. Our organization is recognized as the major horse racing association in the state of Oregon and represents an excess of 1,800 thoroughbred horsemen involved in horse racing at the various tracks throughout the state. Before I go on any further with my prepared statement, I'd like to make you all aware that late last Friday evening, Portland Meadows was sold to Tom Moyer, who is, I believe, the largest shareholder of Hayden Island Corporation. We understand that his intentions are to lease the facility for up to 3 or 4 years, at which time racing in Portland at Portland Meadows will cease. So the demise of our industry is, we don't really know at this time, late developing information. I will say this, that a year ago, before the task force committee, Mr. Richard Cummings and associates made a proposal to that committee that to run a long-term race meet at the Salem State Fairgrounds. Their proposal was to provide the state fair in excess of $500,000 a year of money going to, not to be used for the racetrack, but to develop other portions of the fair. Likewise, they would contribute, I'm going by memory because we're over a year now, but in excess of $250,000 in improving the racetrack and the surrounding facilities. All of that being said, with if Portland Meadows were to go away. That didn't happen, so consequently, the Cummings Associates, nothing materialized. That availability is still there, however. And should Portland no longer have racing, Salem at this time would surely be an option at the racetrack.
So, but David, let me understand you correctly. There is a group that is willing to step forward in the event that Portland Meadows is no longer allowing racing, to assist the Oregon State Fair in holding, in essence, what would be the only real major horse racing in the state. Is that what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Okay, and that was an offer on the table a year ago?
That was on the table a year ago, provided Portland Meadows went away. If Portland Meadows, there was some question at that time as to would Portland Meadows survive or continue. There was talk that they would not.
Okay.
It didn't happen, obviously.
Well, David, in the interest of time, could you summarize the high points of your thoughts on paper here for the committee?
I'd like to go on, if I may.
I'd be very grateful.
Horse racing is an important part of Oregon's agricultural business and job structure. Racing and their related industries contribute over $140 million annually to the state's economy. It provides employment for over 5,000 Oregonians. I'm here today to speak in opposition to the part of HB 2061, which would remove the listing of animal racing as a major objective purpose for the Oregon State Fair. I provided a written statement, and I'm going to try to make it a little bit briefer so that you can view that. First of all, the reports that you've been distributed by Katie Cannon, listed consultants that we believe, I'll get into that, but consultants, they had some bad information. That was corrected by our industry. Unfortunately, those reports never got changed. But horse racing has, in fact, been a major attraction at the Oregon State Fairgrounds for well over 125 years. And it's provided a great deal of revenue to Oregon State Fair, Oregon General Fund, and Oregon's economy. Horse racing in Oregon continues to pay the cost of its regulations through gross receipts, taxes, and other fees paid to the Oregon Racing Commission. The annual race meet in Salem at the Oregon State Fairgrounds contributed over $150,000 per race day to the Salem area and provided temporary employment for between 300 and 500 people. The Oregon State Fair has received revenue from the race meet operator every year since 1991, with the exception of 1998, when the State Fair management decided to operate the race meet themselves. They lost money and thus went to the emergency board for funding to cover that deficit. In late 1996, Mackin Consulting from Minnesota conducted a study entitled Impact and Analysis on Fair Mutual Operations at the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center. In reviewing that report, and what I referred to a moment ago, is where we found many errors in that report. We sent out corrections, and unfortunately, that was never made. The latest consultants unfortunately used the Mackin report without corrections, and so we believe that much of the information you have received remains incorrect. You received a packet here. We talked earlier about revenue to the state fair. The past 2 years, the Oregon HBPA has funded the race meet at Salem. I'm not quite sure what these figures relate to. This shows 99,000 for the 2000. It didn't reflect the 2000 race meet itself, but it shows income of 15,505 of revenue. We paid Oregon State Fair $45,000 for a license to operate our meet. We paid another $10,000 for the box seats and tickets to the fair. The fair, they kept all of the parking, all of the concessions from that venue. And so I'm not quite sure, when we ourselves paid out almost $60,000 to operate a meet, revenue is minimal at 15 or 16,000. I'm not quite sure what that means, but
well, David. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you said you paid $45,000 to the fair for a license as HBPA to run the meet, correct?
Yes, sir.
As a license to do that.
That's correct.
And then another $10,000 for what purpose?
For the box seat.
For the box seat. Mm-hmm. And you're saying, I mean, that's $55,000, and you're contending that ought to be added into the 16,505 as revenue.
I don't know how they derived at these figures, so I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that when we see 16,000 there, and we know we paid almost 60,000, there is a slight discrepancy.
Okay, thank you. Please continue.
Horse racing, unlike 4-H programs, cooking, sewing, gardening exhibitions, and other horse shows, which contribute virtually no income to the Oregon State Fair, are all important ambiences to state fair attractions. Horse racing originated at the state fair in the early 1860s, and since that time has benefited from the revenue produced by that attraction. The Oregon State Fair has received over $750,000 worth of new revenue from concession, rental, maintenance, and major improvements since 1991. Horse racing is directly responsible for bringing thousands of people each year to the state fair at no cost to the state fair, while the state fair continues to spend tremendous dollars to bring in other attractions, which we've seen on the music side, you might say. Benefits derived from horse racing in the Salem community and the state of Oregon are numerous. The loss of horse racing in Oregon during the state fair, we most likely will see county fair race meets in Grants Pass, Union, Prineville, Burns, and Tillamook also jeopardized. With the loss of any of these race meets, we will see a considerable drop and the $140 million annual contribution to our economy. On behalf of the Thoroughbred Horsemen of Oregon, I urge this committee to reject that piece of legislation and allow racing at the Oregon State Fair to be evaluated on its own merit and revenue potential, just like other state fair activities. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, David.
Just a question.
Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Benson, we saw, we had a book, a little blue book.
Speak in the microphone, Representative.
A little blue book was handed out, showed the whole stands, the whole racetrack in a state of deterioration. But it seemed, from looking at it, looks like it's been ongoing for years and years where maintenance hasn't been done. Could you address that, if you've been there and involved in it?
I've been involved in racing in the state now for almost 20 years. I have never, to my knowledge, seen any work done on the grandstand, no improvement whatsoever. And yes, it has gotten to the point it deteriorates. You stand down in the bottom underneath the grandstand, and you got to be careful. You're going to get wet. Water is coming through from somewhere right on through the floors. But, the grandstand has not been maintained.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any further questions of David? Representative?
Thank you, Chairman Krupp. Mr. Benson, I certainly appreciate your position, and I thank you for this the detail of the information you've provided us. Is the intent of this bill, which simply, according to Senator Courtney, removes the mandate that we have horse racing at the state fair, does that eliminate the potential of our continuing to work, you know, to make horse racing, you know, a viable entity? I'm concerned. He many times stressed that, you know, we just want to move the mandate that we have to do it no matter what. Is there something that would preclude us from keeping racing if we had that kind of wording that removed the mandate, do you think? Should we worry about that?
I don't believe, from my understanding, the legislature, the attorneys have said that they can't have horse racing if they're going to lose money. I don't know if that overrides the legislature or that mandate. But furthermore, representing the Horsemen of Oregon, if you don't have a contract with the horsemen, there's not going to be a race meet anyway. And I think what the way the present legislation, I would interpret it, is that they would have racing, providing racing wants to come. I think there's a difference there. You know, they say you got to have racing, but if racing doesn't want to come, you can't have racing anyway. Right now, we have funded the last two race meets. Katie Cannon explained or mentioned the fact that she can't find an operator this year, has put out an ad. Unfortunately, we have paid $300,000 the last 2 years, and part of that funding came from a contract with Multnomah Greyhound Park for simulcasting. We don't have that agreement this year. We have no money to fund a race meet in Salem. So legislation can require it, but if you don't have an operator and you don't have horses and all, there's not going to be any racing anyway. I don't see there's any need to change what's already there.
Follow up, please.
Shortly, thank you.
Short one?
Oh, thank you.
Sorry. Thank you, Chairman Krupp. Mr. Benson, would the Oregon HBPA be willing to contract with the Oregon State Fair to be responsible for horse racing?
If we had the money. See, you have to have money to pay for the purses and pay for the,
right.
We have an operator and so on. If we had the money, we'd be more than happy to do that.
Would you be willing to seek out, you know, support, financing, casino, contribute to certain types of different fundings, grants? I mean, would you want to assume that, maybe?
Absolutely.
I should ask.
Absolutely. We represent the horsemen racing in Oregon, and our number one goal is to provide racing, not eliminate it.
That's wonderful.
We'll do anything we can to help that.
Thank you.
Thank you. David, appreciate your thoughts and bringing to light some interesting information. Thank you. Appreciate it. The chair would like to call Ursula Gibbons, and the chair would also like to make a statement that at 5, we want to conclude this hearing, and I want to hear from all of you that are signed up by 5:30, because we have another extremely important bill that we have to move out of committee today. And for those of you that are waiting here, I'm going to let you know that
Between 5:30 and 6 o'clock, we will hear House Bill 2156 and move it out. So I would ask your patience in waiting until that time. I would like to finish this currently. Ursula, thanks for coming forward. State your name.
Chairman Krupp and representatives on the committee, my name is Ursula Gibbons. I am the executive director of the Oregon Thoroughbred Breeders Association. I represent Oregonians who raise thoroughbreds in Oregon. They have farms. They're very concerned about the marketability of their horses if we lose racing in the state. I won't repeat everything you've already heard, but we're very concerned about losing any racing in the state. And if Portland Meadows, you know, this news about Portland Meadows is always disturbing. If we don't see, if they're only going to be there 3 or 4 years, it takes that long before you breed a mare and she's in foal for a year before she foals, and your foal can't race till it's 2 at the earliest. This is a long-range plans that our people have to make. So we hope you take into consideration everybody involved with the breeding industry in Oregon.
Thank you, Ursula. Appreciate it. Glenn Knickerbocker, you're next, and on deck will be, is it Jim Rose? I'm not sure. Jim, are you here? He has. Okay. So we'll scratch Jim off. So that means that next after Glenn will be Wayne, is it Perry? Perry? Wayne? Okay, you'll be next. All right. Thank you, Glenn. For the record, state your name, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Glenn Knickerbocker. I'm here today representing Lone Oak Racing and Cummings Group, two organizations that have been referenced earlier, and I'd be happy to try to answer specifically a couple of the questions that committee members raised that maybe I could answer directly. However, I don't want to take a great deal of time. You're being handed out some testimony. Surprisingly enough, it'll look very similar to Mr. Benson's testimony. I don't know how that happened, but obviously the horsemen are all concerned, and I think we wanted to be sure we made our major points. I would call your attention. I apologize for the size of the handout. Please don't let that scare you. There's been a lot of discussion today about what's happened in the past and who's done what and where and when and how, and particularly as it relates to the Markham study that was done in 1996. If you look at my attachment, you'll note that there's letters beginning in 1998 to the Legislative Fiscal Office, to Senator Durfler's task force, which I happened to serve on at the time, and to the chairman of the Oregon State Fair Board, and to Senator Durfler, outlining our concerns in some detail about some of the assumptions and conclusions that the original consultant adopted. I also have attached, which are for your own information, but about 10 or 11 pages of charts from a document prepared by the Thoroughbred Association, the National Thoroughbred Association. I apologize, I don't remember the name of it. But anyway, you will see that, in fact, horse racing is not declining, as some people would suggest. As a matter of fact, horse racing is improving. It's increasing every year. That's not to say there aren't problems in racing. There continue to be problems. And Oregon, unfortunately, faces many problems that we've created by ourselves for whatever reason. And we're not as fortunate as some of the states that have worked with that industry and used some of their other resources to help the industry remain viable. And I'd be happy, and other members here would be happy to provide the committee with a great deal of information. When I met with the chairman, I said, we really want our day in court. And I think our day in court is where somebody sits down and looks at the facts and makes an analysis. We'll be the first one to say, if horse racing doesn't pay the bill at the Oregon State Fair, it shouldn't be there. I was the lone voice that said that general fund money should not have ever been used in horse racing. I think that was a mistake, and I still feel that way. That does not say that there aren't some ways that the state can work together with this industry, this $140 million industry, to assure its viability and benefit the state. Now, if I could speak, Mr. Chairman and Representative Krieger, is it? Krieger or Krieger?
Krieger,
I'm sorry. You asked about the upkeep of the facility. I can safely say, and I'd be happy to provide documentation to this effect, that 99% of any improvements that have been made to the racing facility at the Oregon State Fairground since 1992 were done by Lone Oak Racing and the Horsemen. We painted the grandstands. We put new steps on the steps. We did a variety of things. The State Fair did do a little bit, but very, very small amount. Now, at the same time that I say that, the State Fair had a great big problem, and you're aware of what that problem is. That's not only the grandstand that's falling down. They have a number of other facilities that are severely neglected. But I would suggest to you that if it hadn't been for horse racing, maybe that grandstand would have fallen down or been condemned before this. And we didn't put a great deal of money into that, but as Mr. Benson indicated, we put over $750,000 either in direct revenue or our improvements to the racing facility at the Oregon State Fairgrounds since 1992, the Horsemen, Lone Oak Racing, Cummings Group, and we're willing to continue to do that. We have a practical problem of funding, and in answer to your question, Vice Chair, I can assure you that we will do everything we can to find alternative resources. Now, one last comment. You asked about mandates. And I have a great deal of respect for Senator Courtney, and I know that he has agonized over this for hours, and he has his reasons for it. I think that by adopting this legislation, you send a clear mandate to the Oregon State Fair and to the legislature and to the public that you don't want horse racing, but you don't want animal racing. I don't see you taking this out of the statute being anything but a mandate going 180 degrees the opposite way. As Mr. Benson alluded, we understand, we're not experts in this, but we understand that the Oregon State Fair has been advised that they cannot be forced to operate horse racing at the Oregon State Fair at a loss to them. All we're asking is for, let's figure out a way to maintain that facility. It's a free show to the people that come to the fair. It's generated a large amount of revenue over the last few years, granted not the revenue that it did in the 80s, and early our 70s and into the mid-80s, but I think that you can look at the lottery and Indian gaming to understand some of that. So with that, I won't belabor it. I hope I've answered some of the issues that you've raised. If I didn't, I apologize, and I have taken longer than I should have.
Thank you. Glenn, do we have questions of this witness? Hey, Glenn, thank you very much. If I could ask you all to stay put, the chair's got to make an executive decision here and change the order of things. I'm going to lose a bunch of my committee members here shortly. So what I would ask the remaining six people waiting to testify, if you would just hold tight for a few minutes, please. Please, thank you. We're going to switch gears, and we're going to close the public hearing on this bill. Wait a moment. We're going to recess the public hearing. We're not going to close it. We're just going to recess it. And then we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2156 and move it out very quickly. And we're going to come right back to your issue because I appreciate all of you coming and I want to hear your thoughts. Okay, in that regard, we're going to recess a public hearing on House Bill 2061 and we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2156. Ray, we have amendments. Would you share them with the committee, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we're going to pass out -5 amendments. There's a couple of things, if you'll indulge me, that I need to go over. On the preliminary SMS, it has a -1 amendment. That -1 amendment has been included in the -5 amendments. There is a -2 amendment that should be before you that is separate than the -5 amendments and needs to be considered separately, and what that does is add the Oregon State University Extension Service to the education program portion of this bill. The -5 amendments, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, were received while we were in committee, and I do know that the Department of Agriculture, Oregon Department of Agriculture, is here to explain those changes.
Okay, the chair would like to call Oregon Department of Agriculture. Whomever is here, is Chuck still here? Oh, boy.
Mr. Chair, I do have the notes if you'd like me to do it.
Go ahead and get started, Ray. I'd still like to have ODA come forward with their thoughts.
Yes,
go ahead,
Mr.
Ray.
Mr. Chair, if everybody would scratch out the -4 and replace that with -5, just on your preliminary SMS so you can follow along.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2156-5 amendments direct the State Department of Agriculture and Department of Environmental Quality to seek approval from the United States Environmental Protection Agency for the transfer of combined animal feeding operations, otherwise known as CAFO. That's the permitting program pursuant to 33 United States Code 1342 from the DEQ to the Department of Agriculture. It directs the Oregon Department of Agriculture to assume all permitting and enforcement responsibilities for CAFO at such time as the EPA approves the transfer. It requires the ODA and DEQ to notify the EPA of completion of interagency agreements and administrative procedures necessary for the transfer of the permitting program to the Department of Agriculture. To the extent practicable and within funding, it requires the ODA to create and implement an educational program, inform and familiarize CAFO operators with any new administrative rules or related regulatory programs implemented as a result of ODA's new program authority. It requires the Oregon Department of Agriculture to inform the President of the Senate, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, and the Legislative Council Committee of the assumption of permitting and enforcement responsibilities for CAFO at the time the EPA approves program transfer. It requires the Environmental Quality Commission retain program authority until formal transfer is approved by the EPA, and allows for the Oregon Department of Agriculture to carry out program functions in conjunction with the Environmental Quality Commission during this interim. It adds the Oregon Department of Agriculture as CAFO permitting authority. It defines CAFO by reference to administrative rules that will be constructed by the Oregon Department of Agriculture and Department of Environmental Quality. It removes fee assessment for CAFO in operation for 4 months or less. It allows the Oregon Department of Agriculture to revoke or modify a CAFO permit, and it adds the Oregon Department of Agriculture to all other CAFO requirements currently specified under statute to the Department of Environmental Quality. It declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2001.
Okay, thank you, Ray. I appreciate that. Members, I appreciate you staying. This is, for lack of a better term, is a work in progress. And let me share with you that we need to move this legislation through the process for a whole host of reasons. We are not finished with it, however. There is some language and negotiation going on with interested parties on one very small issue that we want to resolve before the legislation is signed into law by the governor. And what that means is that we're going to pass it out as it is today to the full House. We will pass it from the House to the Senate, and during that process we will continue to work that small language issue out and get that finished on the Senate side and then get it back to us for concurrence, and then we will give it to the governor for his signature. That's our intention today, and that's why I wish ODA was here, but the amendments that have been brought forward have been the result of a lot of work by a lot of people from EPA, EPA's lawyers, working with Department of Justice's lawyers, working with ODA, working with DEQ, in crafting this language that brings us to where we need to be. So based on that, members, I'm asking you to consider both the Dash 2 amendments and the Dash 5 amendments. So the chair at this time would entertain a motion to move first the Dash 2 amendments.
Into the bill.
Yeah. Representative Krieger moves the Dash 2 amendments in the House Bill 2156. Discussion? Is there any objection? The Dash 2 amendments are adopted.
Chair would entertain a motion to move the Dash 5 amendments.
Dash 5 is into the bill, 2156.
It has been so moved. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? The Dash 5 amendments are so moved. The Chair would entertain a motion to recommend to the full House House Bill 2156 with a due pass as amended.
Mr. Chair, so moved.
It has been so made. Would the clerk, is there any discussion? Thank you, members. Would the clerk call the roll, please?
Representative Doyle?
Aye.
Representative Krieger?
Aye.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Ackerman?
Aye.
Representative Hobson?
Aye.
Representative Nolan?
No.
Vice Chair King?
Excused?
Vice Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2156 is hereby passed to the full House as amended with a due pass recommendation, and the Chair will be the carrier of the legislation. Thank you, members. I do appreciate your indulgence. Thank you for staying. At this time, we will close the work session on House Bill 2156 and I guess reconvene the public hearing on House Bill 2061. And the Chair would like to call Wayne Peary, please. So if someone could find Wayne, Wayne will stand at ease until Wayne comes back in. Thank you. Busier than